Have you ever tried asking a group of investors if it's a good time to buy a property?
Oh man. Yeah, that's a loaded question.
Seriously, just imagine you walk into a room, gather 10 seasoned real estate folks, and just throw that question right into the middle of the circle.
You're practically guaranteeing chaos at that point.
Right. You'd get 10 completely different answers. I mean, a few are going to aggressively tell you that prices are artificially inflated, the bubble is bursting, and you should absolutely wait.
Oh, for sure. And then others will lean in, look at you like you're crazy for not acting, and say the demographic momentum is just starting to build, so you have to buy today.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's always that one person who just, stares into their coffee cup and mutters that there is never a perfect time to do anything.
Yeah, it's basically the ultimate Rorschach test for financial anxiety. I
Yeah.
mean, everyone in that room is looking at the exact same macroeconomic data.
The same charts, the same interest rates.
Right. But they're processing it all through their own completely different filters of, fear, ambition, liquidity, time horizons.
Exactly. And if you are just trying to figure out your own financial future, that kind of chaotic noise is just, it's
It
paralyzing.
really is. You just
You're
freeze.
left standing there thinking, well, if the veterans can't agree on the data, how am I supposed to know where to deploy my capital?
Which is exactly why we're doing this deep dive today.
Welcome to the deep dive, by the way. We've got a fantastic stack of research in front of us today, anchored by a really insightful guide from Usul Gamma titled Understanding Property Market Cycles Before You Invest.
Yeah, it's a great read. And we're also layering in some of their context on investment metrics.
Right, plus some foundational real estate mechanics from Investopedia, just to, really ground this in reality.
Because the goal here is absolute clarity. We want to take that chaotic room of conflicting advice, dissect the mechanics behind it, and just quiet the noise down.
Yes, exactly. The mission for our deep dive today is to strip away all that anxiety you might feel about finding the absolute perfect timing.
Because it doesn't exist.
It doesn't. We want to help you understand the natural, predictable rhythm of property markets. Because once you understand the mechanics of that rhythm, you stop reacting to the headlines.
You really do. You become empowered to make confident long-term decisions.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the first thing we have to do is completely dismantle a myth that is almost certainly distorting how you view the market right now.
Oh, you mean the illusion of the straight line?
Yes, the straight line myths.
It is the most pervasive psychological trap in real estate. I mean, human beings are biologically wired to just extrapolate current trends indefinitely into the future.
Right, we have this deep-seated psychological desire for things to be simple, linear and permanent.
We want to believe that property prices either always go up, up, up like a rocket, or they're in a perpetual state of crashing down.
It's recency bias taking over. Like, if prices rose 10% last year, our brains immediately assume they're going to rise 10% every year for the rest of our lives.
Which is crazy, right? Because neither of those things is mathematically or economically sustainable.
No, not at all.
The reality is far more dynamic. Property markets just do not move in straight lines. They move in distinct cyclical phases.
Driven by capital flows and demographic shifts, right? And the Usul Gamma Guide introduces this brilliant, very intuitive analogy for this.
The seasons.
Yes, the changing seasons. They compare the property market cycle to the changing seasons, which makes so much sense when you really think about it.
It really does. I
Yeah.
mean, summer doesn't last forever. The heat eventually breaks.
But neither does winter. The snow always melts eventually. Each season brings completely different conditions. And as a human being, you naturally adjust your behavior, right?
You don't wear a heavy parka to the beach in July.
Exactly. And you don't panic when the leaves start falling in October either. You just adapt your wardrobe to the environment.
Precisely. You don't try to stop autumn from happening, nor do you assume that autumn means the earth is, permanently dying.
Right. You just prepare for the shift in temperature. But let me push back on this a little bit on behalf of the listener.
Sure, go ahead.
Because real estate isn't just about picking the right jacket. I mean, it's about life savings. It's about massive amounts of leverage.
Oh, absolutely.
So if I buy a property at the absolute peak of summer and a deep macroeconomic winter hits, my asset might drop 20% in paper value.
It definitely could, yeah.
But my mortgage payment stays exactly the same. That's not just a change in weather, that's a severe cash flow crisis. So why shouldn't an investor try to time the market to avoid being completely underwater on a loan?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, That fear of negative equity is entirely valid if your strategy relies on short-term flipping or, you know, liquidating the asset tomorrow.
Okay, so if you're trying to get out quick.
Right, but change itself is a completely normal part of the investment journey. It is not an error in the system, it is the system.
That's a good way to put it.
Real estate is inherently an illiquid long-term play. Experienced investors know that if you structure your debt correctly and your rental yield covers your debt service obligations, a drop in paper value during a market winter is largely irrelevant.
Because you aren't selling anyway.
Exactly. The tenant is still paying down the principal of your loan every single month.
I see. You're riding out the paper losses because the underlying cash flow is insulated.
Exactly. If you panic and try to time the market by staying in cash, waiting for the perfect winter bottom, you incur a massive opportunity cost.
Because of inflation.
Yes. Inflation is actively eroding your purchasing power while you wait on the sidelines. You end up trading the long-term compounding effects of the market for short-term emotional relief from volatility.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense. You're basically reacting to a scary headline instead of the actual financial mechanics of your specific property.
Which is what a lot of people do, unfortunately.
Right. Which leads us perfectly into the next layer of this deep dive, because if we accept that the market changes like the seasons, we need to understand the physical engine that causes the weather to change, you know?
Markets don't just shift by chance.
No! Somebody didn't just flip a switch in a back room at the central bank.
No, it's a really complex interplay of macroeconomic forces.
Mm-hmm.
A property market cycle is driven by economic growth, employment levels, interest rates,
housing supply, government zoning policies, all of that.
Right. And fundamentally, the elasticity of buyer demand.
So let's trace the anatomy of one of these shifts, because the analogies are helpful, but I want to get under the hood here.
Okay, let's do it.
Let's look at the pipeline from a massive boom to a sudden slowdown instead of the typical party running out of snacks analogy.
Always a classic, though.
True. But let's look at the market like a giant bathtub instead.
A bathtub. Okay, I'm with you.
So the water flowing out of the faucet represents new housing supply coming onto the market. And the drain at the bottom represents buyer demand pulling that inventory out of the tub.
That is an excellent mechanistic way to visualize it. Because during a boom phase, employment is high and money is cheap.
Interest rates are low.
Exactly. Because borrowing costs are so low, the drain in your bathtub is just wide open.
So water is just rushing out.
Right. Buyers are absorbing inventory faster than developers can even build it. The water level, which is the active inventory on the market, drops incredibly low.
Which forces buyers into those crazy bidding wars, driving prices way up.
Yep, you got it.
And when prices skyrocket like that, developers see these massive profit margins, right? So they crank the supply faucet on full blast.
Oh yeah, they secure permits, buy land, and just start pouring concrete everywhere.
But here is the critical lag in the system. Developers cannot turn that faucet off instantly.
No, buildings take 2 to 3 years to complete.
Right. So as this new supply is finally coming to market, the macroeconomic environment begins to overheat. Inflation rises.
And to combat inflation, central banks have to step in and raise interest rates.
And this is where the math just destroys the momentum. A 2% rise in interest rates isn't just a minor annoyance, is it?
No, it is a profound destruction of purchasing power.
Like, if a buyer was qualified to borrow $500,000 at a 3% rate, a jump to a 6% rate might mean they only qualify for $350,000.
Exactly right. Their monthly budget hasn't changed at all, but the math of the loan completely disqualifies them.
So by raising rates, the central bank has effectively clogged the drain in our bathtub.
Yep, the buyer pool physically shrinks. Mm. But remember, the developer's faucet is still pouring water into the tub because they started those projects 3 years ago.
Oh, wow. So you have a clogged drain and an open faucet.
Exactly. And the water level, the inventory of unsold homes, rapidly rises.
And suddenly the velocity of the market just plummets. Days on market stretch from like 2 weeks to 3 months.
It feels like everything just freezes.
Right. But if I'm listening to this and I see transaction volume falling off a cliff, isn't the market in serious trouble? Shouldn't the listener be worried that the tub is going to overflow and crash the house?
Not inherently, no. I mean, a slowdown simply means the market cannot grow at a breakneck pace indefinitely.
Right. Trees don't grow to the sky.
Exactly. It is mathematically impossible for housing to outpace wage growth forever. A cooling period isn't necessarily a systemic crash. It's often just a reversion to the mean.
It's just stabilizing.
Yes.
Oh.
It creates the breathing room the market needs to absorb that new supply and stabilize the price-to-income ratios before the next growth phase can even begin.
That makes total sense. Understanding that underlying engine, knowing the specific causality behind the data, is basically your armor against uncertainty.
It really is. You stop looking at rising inventory as a catastrophic threat and start seeing it as just a mechanical reality.
Which forces us to rethink how we even talk about real estate in general.
Mm-hmm.
Because casually people always say, oh, it's a good market right now, or oof, it's a bad market.
I hear that all the time. But that binary labeling is incredibly limiting. And frankly, it's the mark of an amateur.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Institutional and experienced investors never use the terms good or bad, because every single stage of the property market cycle creates distinct opportunities.
Depending entirely on your capitalization and your strategy.
Exactly.
So let's break that down thoroughly, phase by phase, because this is crucial for the listener to apply to their own portfolio.
Let's do it.
Let's start with the growth phase. If I'm reading the Investopedia definitions right, this is when prices are accelerating.
Right. Confidence is high. Buyers are active.
But mechanically, as prices rise faster than rental rates, your rental yields actually compress. So the opportunity is capital appreciation, but the risk is overpending for diminished cash flow.
Precisely. In a growth phase, everyone feels like a genius because asset values are just naturally inflating.
A rising tide lifts all boats.
Right? Exactly. However, because prices are high and competition is fierce, the requirement for the investor is extreme discipline.
You can't just buy anything.
No, you have to be highly selective. You are looking for properties that hold intrinsic long-term value, perhaps through, you know, value-add renovations or superior locations.
Rather than just buying any asset with a pulse and praying the momentum continues.
Right. You have to make sure you aren't just the greatest fool buying at the very top.
Okay, what about the slowdown phase? This is when the news headlines are screaming about a crash, inventory's piling up, and first-time buyers are completely frozen with hesitation.
Well, mechanically, this is when the leverage in a transaction flips completely from the seller to the buyer.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. During the boom, sellers could demand all cash, waived inspections, whatever they wanted. But in a slowdown, that power dynamic just evaporates. Sellers who actually need to move become highly motivated.
So the opportunity here isn't just a lower price, it's better terms.
Exactly. You can demand repairs, favorable closing timelines, or even seller financing. You have the luxury of time.
You aren't rushing.
Right. You can underwrite a deal carefully without the pressure of 20 other buyers breathing down your neck. It's a period that deeply rewards thorough due diligence.
Which brings us to the phase that scares people the most. The slump or the trough. The absolute bottom of the cycle.
Yeah, the trough. Market sentiment is terrible, credit is tight, and you see widespread capitulation.
Foreclosures might tick up too?
They usually do. And the psychology of the trough is fascinating. Most retail investors run for the exits here.
I just want out.
Right. But this is where generational wealth is often built.
Right.
If you have maintained your liquidity through the slowdown, you can acquire assets well below their replacement cost.
Because everyone else is panicking.
You are buying the underlying utility of the real estate at a steep discount, purely because other market participants are forced to liquidate.
Wow. And then eventually the macroeconomic gears shift again, bringing us into the recovery phase.
Yep. Inflation cools, central banks lower rates to stimulate the economy, the bathtub drain opens back up.
And demand starts ticking up again.
In recovery, confidence gradually creeps back in. But again, the opportunity lies in focusing on the long-term fundamentals, employment drivers in the city, infrastructure developments, population migration.
Rather than trying to ride an emotional wave.
Exactly.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because everything we just discussed across those four phases highlights a massive psychological trap.
Oh, the bottom fishing trap.
Yes. Human nature makes us want to optimize everything. We tell ourselves, I'm going to wait for prices to hit absolute rock bottom in the trough, and the exact day before the recovery starts, I'll swoop in and deploy all my capital.
Everyone thinks they can do it.
Right. Why is trying to time the market perfectly such a notoriously catastrophic idea?
Because it operates on the false premise that any one retail investor or institutional fund manager actually knows where the absolute bottom or the absolute top is in real time.
And they don't.
You don't.
Yeah.
You only identify the trough in the rearview mirror, usually 6 to 9 months after it already happened.
Oh, wow.
Consistently predicting these macroeconomic turning points is practically impossible. I mean, even veteran economists with supercomputers and access to real-time banking data consistently disagree on forecasts.
And those forecasts are revised constantly, right?
Exactly.
It's like trying to catch a falling knife in the dark. I mean, you might grab the handle once by pure luck, but eventually you are going to get cut.
Exactly. And the consequence of trying to time the market is usually a binary failure.
How so?
Well, either you stay in cash waiting for a bottom that actually happened a year ago and you miss out on massive appreciation. Or, conversely, you get so terrified that prices will keep rising forever that you rush in at the absolute peak at a pure fear of missing out.
You just abandon all your underwriting criteria just to get in the door.
Yes. So the focus really has to shift.
It's a profound shift in thinking. You have to stop asking the universe, is the market good right now? And start asking yourself, does this specific asset, under these specific debt terms, achieve my target return on equity?
That is literally the only question that matters.
You focus entirely on what you can control.
Right. The capital allocation, the expected rental demand, the barrier to entry for competing properties in that specific neighborhood.
But let's get deeply practical here for a second. Let's talk about structural solutions.
Okay, let's hear it.
Because if predicting the top or bottom of the market is practically impossible, and buying a whole property requires a massive amount of upfront capital, that introduces severe sequence of returns risks.
Absolutely.
If you dump all your liquidity into a single asset right before a prolonged slump, you are incredibly vulnerable.
You're completely exposed.
Right. So how does a listener stay invested, capture the yields of real estate, without betting the farm while they wait to see what macroeconomic season we're in?
Well, that is the defining structural barrier to entry in traditional real estate, isn't it? Asset illiquidity and capital concentration.
It's just so expensive to get in.
Right. The sheer amount of equity required to buy an entire building makes it very hard to be agile. If you are carrying a massive levered single-family mortgage and the market enters a deep winter, your personal liquidity is highly threatened.
Which is why I love the concept highlighted in the Osul Gamma sources as a structural alternative, which is fractional property ownership.
Yeah, fractional ownership is a game changer.
We aren't just talking about a cute slice of cake analogy here. We are talking about highly granular capital allocation. Like, instead of trying to perfectly time the purchase of the entire pie, you know, you're buying a single slice of an income-generating property to get started.
It is a profound structural solution to the exact problems of illiquidity and concentration risk we just talked about.
It really is.
Fractional ownership allows you to purchase equity shares of an income-generating asset rather than taking on the debt burden of the entire property yourself.
Let's break down the mechanics of why that matters so much. Say you have, like, $50,000 to invest.
Okay, 50 grand.
In the traditional model, you use all $50,000 as a down payment on one house in one city. You are 100% exposed to the microeconomy of that single neighborhood.
What's fascinating here is how fractional ownership completely transforms that risk profile.
Right.
Instead of a single concentrated bet, you can deploy that same $50,000 across 10 different properties in 5 different cities across different property classes, say, residential, commercial, and industrial.
It's amazing. You basically achieve institutional-level diversification with retail-level capital.
Precisely. It drastically lowers your initial capital commitment per asset. And crucially, it completely neutralizes the fear of the market winter we discussed earlier.
Because you aren't carrying a massive mortgage on your personal balance sheet.
Exactly. A market slowdown doesn't threaten your personal solvency. You can hold your fractional shares through the trough without sweating the monthly debt payments.
You're just simply collecting your proportionate share of the rental yield while you wait for the recovery phase.
Right. And it entirely bypasses the anxiety of timing.
Because you can just ease in.
Exactly. If you are modulating your exposure through fractional shares, you don't need to stay up at night worrying if the broader market's going to drop 5% next month.
you can just dollar cost average into the real estate market.
Yep, buying shares consistently across all four phases of the cycle. It shifts all of your energy away from the impossible task of macroeconomic forecasting.
And redirects that energy toward evaluating the intrinsic quality of the assets themselves.
It democratizes access, yes, but more importantly, it enforces disciplined behavior.
Which is what everyone needs.
Right. Because whether the broader market is expanding, stabilizing, slumping, or recovering, the principles of capital allocation remain exactly the same.
You evaluate the yield, you evaluate the location.
And you match the investment to your personal risk tolerance. You're focusing on the math, not the noise of the crowd.
So, what does this all mean? If we zoom all the way out and look at everything we've unpacked today across these sources, the biggest takeaway is really about the locus of your control. No investor, not you, not the institutional funds, not the pundits on TV can dictate where the macroeconomic cycle goes next.
Nobody has a crystal ball.
No. But you can completely control your preparation and your structure. Understanding market phases isn't about finding a crystal ball to predict the next big boom. It's an anchor.
It keeps you grounded.
It exists so that you aren't manipulated by short-term market noise or scary headlines. When you understand the mechanics of the bathtub, when you know exactly why inventory is rising or why yields are compressing, you stop panicking.
You adjust your strategy to fit the phase.
Exactly.
This raises an important question, and it's a concept I really want you, the listener, to chew on today.
Oh, I like this.
If you were to completely abandon the fantasy of finding the absolute perfect time to invest, if you just accepted that the market will always be cycling, how much more mental energy would you have right now to hunt for mispriced assets, optimize your tax structures, and evaluate the actual tangible quality of the opportunity sitting right in front of you?
That is the perfect note to end on. Because once you let go of trying to predict the weather, you can actually start building a house that withstands any season.
I love that.
So the next time you picture that chaotic room of investors screaming about whether it's a good time to buy, you don't have to join the argument. You can just smile, look at the data, figure out what phase the market is actually in, and quietly execute your strategy.
Exactly.
Thank you for joining us for this deep dive. Keep questioning the consensus, keep exploring the mechanics behind the data, and we'll catch you on the next one.